Welcome to Life in the 614, the official lifestyle and entertainment podcast of the Columbus Dispatch, where we provide a taste of upcoming arts, entertainment, and leisure activities throughout Central Ohio. This is Earl Hopkins, features reporter at the Dispatch.
And on this week's episode, we have music critic, essayist, and poet Hanif Abdurraqib, who's here to talk about being selected as one of the 25 MacArthur Genius Grant recipients and the greater effort to help advance Columbus's art and culture space. Hanif, thank you for joining the pod.
Yo, thank you for having me, fam.
Absolutely. And so when you were notified about your selection as a Genius Grant winner, which awarded you roughly about $625,000 stipend over 5 years as a token for your future creative endeavors, what was your initial reaction when you heard the news?
It's one of those things that I think in most of the people who got the call said this in various interviews, it seems like a joke or it doesn't seem real, you know, in part because the call is so odd. The basic structure of the call is so odd. So it didn't seem real, but once it sinks in, I mean, for me, you know, I think that I felt a lot of gratitude, but also just feel overwhelmed. You know, I don't do great with a ton of attention all at once. And so, you know, I feel like my brain was kind of just like, okay, here comes a lot of something that I might not be able to handle. But then, you know, my second thought is always, how do I get back to the work? How do I stay focused on the work? The work is what bought me here. So the work is what's going to get me elsewhere. And that's all I need.
And I'm sure it was that much more fulfilling of a moment, given the fact that you were joining, you know, other recipients, one of them being someone that I recognize as an inspiration of yours, which is Amina Robinson. How was that? Like, was it heightened even more, or was it something that gave you a sense of more like overwhelming sense of gratitude? Like, what was your feelings with that?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, the Amina stuff has become I'm happy with this, but the Amina connection has become a part of the narrative of me getting the award, which is great and fine. And but when it came down, when the news came down, I wasn't thinking about it, not because, you know, and in part only because I don't often think of Amina through her legacy as someone who has been awarded things. And so I didn't necessarily at first draw the connection between, you know, me getting this and Amina getting this. And so, you know, as that sunk in, I began to feel a bit more, I don't know, perhaps grounded in the reality of the situation, in part because Amina's work is such a big deal to me and has meant so much to Black artists in Columbus, and to kind of get to continue in a legacy, a creative legacy that she helped build is really overwhelming. And you know, of course, Anne Hamilton is the other Columbus artist who have gotten the award. And, you know, with any luck, I will not be the last.
For sure. And that's one of the things that resonated with me the most upon our initial interview. It was announced that you received this award, you mentioned how, you know, you felt a sense of gratitude and you were happy about being a recipient, but you immediately directed the conversation towards, you know, ensuring that, you know, whatever resources you obtained, you were going to use them for the betterment of other local artists and creatives. And with that, ensuring that you aren't the last name from Columbus to receive this award. So tell me where that mindset really comes from. Where is that derived from? Is that derived from individuals like Amina who inspired you to think, you know, outside of your own work or your own impact and to ensure other people are, you know, meeting their goals?
Yeah. And I mean, like, and folks like Scott Woods and Barbara Fant and Dion Custer Edwards. I mean, so many artists in the city who I look up to have always created with others in mind and not just attempts to further their own career. Some of those artists, like, and I think about Dion and Scott often in this way, you know, sacrifice time away from their own work, their own brilliant work, you know, to further the work of others. And that is, you know, a generosity that can't be replicated or duplicated, I think. And, but that has been instructive for me. You know, I think about, you know, whenever I talk to Scott, I feel like he's got like 5 to 10 different projects on the back burner, and they're not on the back burner because he's lazy or because, you know, Scott works incredibly hard. Same with folks like Dion. I mean, these people work incredibly hard. They just balance their work with a mission to further the work of others. And that, I think, is a really worthwhile pursuit.
Absolutely. And do you feel, you named all these individuals that I know share your similar mindset, and do you feel this shared effort to, you know, look outside one's work and to encourage other people to follow their dreams and, you know, meet their goals, is that something that's plentiful in the city, or is that something that's needed more so in Columbus from other artists?
Well, it's plentiful, but there could always be more. But I do think it's plentiful, you know, because what we're also talking about is people getting time and space to do what they need to do. You know, you look at something like Streetlight Guild, for example, so much of that is just saying, well, you know, here's a space. Here's a space for you to do what you need to do, and I'll get out of the way. And I think there's something about that that's really built into my ethos and built into my process of how can I give people something they need and then very quickly move out of the way? Because that is so much of what happened for me when I was a younger artist. People would say, well, I'll give you these tools and then I'm gone. You got to figure them out. And through the process of figuring them out is how I became the artist I became. So, of course, there's plenty of that in the city right now. And I don't think there's a shortage of that. But, you know, there could always be more space for people to create, and especially for people to kind of make early mistakes in their work and not really suffer any material consequence for it. Like so much of my early work, I got to read it at poetry open mics and get kind of corrected or guided a little better. And that's, I think, vital. It's not just being able to kind of do things, but it's kind of being able to have to stumble through things without consequence, to stumble your way to something better without grand consequence.
And that's especially essential for, as you said, young creatives who are still trying to find their artistic voice and are still looking for, you know, potential opportunities to follow in, you know, the footsteps of individuals like yourself, Scott Woods, and other folks that you mentioned. And so, you know, I know there isn't a time frame, but what steps do you feel you yourself plan to do to ensure that that's possible for aspiring artists?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I my whole thing is how can I continue in the path I'm already on, which, you know, I have been for a while before the MacArthur. I think that contributing like material resources to folks who are already doing the work that I, you know, it's one thing to say, well, I dream this world, but it's another thing to say, okay, where is this world already being dreamed up by folks? You know, and that isn't just on an artistic front, like redistributing resources to an organization like Be Quick, for example, Black Queer Intersectional Collective. That helps on a front of organizing inequity, but that also helps on an artistic front. Anything, any redistribution of resources that gives people more time, right? That is something that is equity building, but that is also something that is art building, because time is a resource. And yeah, you know, there are grand ways that I can contribute that don't place me at the forefront of anything. I'm really not that interested in being at the forefront of anything. I don't want to be the face of anything. You know, I get to be the face of enough things, whether or not I want to be. And so then the better question is, how can I contribute to existing movements, things, people who are already doing the work and who have already been doing the work? And that's kind of where my excitement lies.
Absolutely. And I know with that mission, you feel it's important for other artists to recognize those that are lending both their, you know, financial resources, their time, and any other efforts that they administer to or for the betterment of the local community. I'm sure you would agree, like, it's important for each of these artists to support one another as best that they can and to share each of their resources that they have, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because we can't, well, one, nothing happens on, no one can do anything on their own. Equity and power is built, people power is built by collectives of people. But it's also important because no one can do anything on their own, it's important to tap in. And I mean, this is something I always talk about. It's important for me to do this. It's important to tap in and ask who is already doing the work so that I am not, you know, coming up over top of anyone who's already doing good work. And that's what I mean when I say, like, it's more useful for me to think about how can I funnel resources elsewhere to people who are already doing things that I am dreaming up, because just because I'm dreaming them up doesn't mean that they are not existing in the world. And it is not only selfish and a little bit arrogant to imagine that I could dream up something better than something that's already existing, but it also shuts us out of that real communal experience of saying, well, how can I tap in? How can I be of service to you, someone who is already doing this work? How can we dream this up together? That has been a part of my life and space in this community ever since I started making art here. And, you know, it's the old adage of get in where you fit in, which is, I believe in that. And that's been my move. That's been my mold. And I'm lucky to just I'm lucky to be able to keep fitting in where I can for now.
Absolutely. I love that mindset, because oftentimes there are certain individuals that, you know, they get to a certain level or have a certain platform and they see what somebody else is doing. They're like, well, I have a bigger name or brand. I could do it better. And, you know, and sometimes, unfortunately, they think of that as a way to, you know, make money rather than center it on the basis of those efforts, which is to essentially help those that are aspiring to do similar or greater things. So I love that mindset. Like, that's powerful for sure.
I also can't do it. There are a few things that I can do better than anyone else. And I don't even know what those things are. And they're not things that I think are really beneficial to any kind of wider community. You know what I mean? Like the things I can rattle off MBA stats off the top of my head, probably better than most people, but that's not really beneficial to liberation or equity or any artistic growth in the city. And so I'm very acutely aware of the fact that I just can't do a lot better than anyone else. And so I don't want to put myself in a position where I'm kind of on the hook to do that. It's not fair. It's not fair to this community I love. Now I can do a lot of good in collaboration with folks. And I can do a lot of good things in collaboration with folks who see the world similar to the way I do, but perhaps have more, you know, more time, more energy to, you know, I think that the thing with me is I just want to do everything. And to want to do everything is one thing, but to know that you are incapable of doing everything, I think, is the real trick. And in my younger years, I even mean like 3 years ago, I want to do everything. And my first thought was, how can I do everything? How can I like feed folks? How can I work with incarcerated folks? How can I do? And then it became, as I've gotten older, it's become a question of how can I do all these things in collaboration with folks who are already doing them, so that I'm not much of an individualist. As I get older, I'm less and less of an individualist. And so, you know, I'm searching and seeking for how I can fit into the already happening.
Absolutely. And you fit in, it seems seamlessly, like with you being tapped as editor at large at Tin House Publishing, with the mural recently being etched out with you, with your face on it, and this newest award, as well as the national one you're contending for your latest book. Like you from our interviews are very cognizant of like what's going on around you, as well as the things that you're recognized for, right? But have you felt that sense of, I guess, that celebratory like feeling, despite, you know, the arts community and the larger community being affected still by the ongoing pandemic? Like, how have you balanced that? Because I know like somebody as introspective as you, it may be a little difficult, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really celebrated much. I mean, but I'm also not a big, you know, this is funny, but I'm not really a celebratory person. I think that I get very steeped in gratitude, which is a type of celebration, but it's a more of a quiet but immense gratitude. And that is the closest I get to celebration. And I think with that gratitude comes grief, you know, because of how I see arts communities have been impacted by not just the pandemic, but like mass inequities across the city that existed before the pandemic and all exists after. And of course, I feel some grief for the fact that, you know, many folks I love aren't here to be along this journey with me, folks who I think would make this journey clearer for me. But, you know, I'm not a big, like, I think this comes with not really being much of an individualist. I'm not a big celebratory person. I think I just have immense gratitude for the fact that I didn't arrive here alone. You know, I mean, like, a lot of people know my story, but like, I'm someone who was incarcerated in the past and who was in and out of courthouses here, who was unhoused for a while in the city. Like, I don't think I've lived a lot of lives before I've gotten to this life, and I didn't do it alone. And it came with a lot of people taking chances on me when they didn't have to and shouldn't have. And so to celebrate would mean I just have so much, you know, for me, celebrating is maybe even being at a point, you know, it's not these accolades. It's the fact that I live in a city and love it and am able to give back to it in ways that make sense to me, because that is what seemed actually out of reach for me more than anything. Like, it did not feel like I would ever be able to be in this city in a point where I could give back to it in a way that feels at least somewhat adequate.
100%. And Hanif, I want to thank you for opening yourself up and giving us this insight for this episode, because this is incredibly powerful. And I know for each listener that tunes into this, like, their mind would just be that much more expanded. So I want to thank you for hopping on the pod, and I greatly appreciate it, man.
Oh, anytime. You know, I'd love to come back on maybe when things are a little bit calmer for me and we could talk about something other than myself, you know?
For sure, 100%. So, all right, Hanif, take care.
Thanks, you too, fam.